Welcome to
Wrinkled
Not Dead.
I'm Jennifer.
And I'm Mike.
We may be over 50, but we're here to prove we're still relevant.
And we have lots of real-world advice on confronting the challenges, but having fun getting older.
We're wrinkled.
Not dead.
Let's do this.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 48 of Wrinkled Not Dead. I'm Mike Bell.
And I'm Jen Bell.
Anything you'd like to know about Wrinkled Not Dead can be found on our blog, wrinklednotdead.com, where all of our earlier episodes are found. You can make comments, you can rate us, subscribe, make suggestions, which are always welcome, or you can go, of course, to iTunes and search in podcasts, or, the list goes on, to our Facebook page as well.
And if you could share with your friends and family, that's the best way of getting the word out there of our podcast, and then we can continue to bring you free, interesting, fun information all along the way.
Now, at the beginning of the year, remember we launched the idea of the terrific Tell Me Something Good jar, where we drop in little things during the day, during the week, whenever it happens, into a jar, a big mason jar, of things that just record the nice things in our life. And our hope is everybody who's listening will find the same kind of apparatus. And at the end of the year, on New Year's Eve, we open the jar and celebrate the good stuff.
If you go to our wrinklednotdead.com blog, you will see a picture of the jar, and it kind of explains the whole idea about the whole thing. It's kind of fun. I'm looking forward to New Year's Eve.
We've been married for 33 years, and we do radio and TV, writing, narration, live presentation, all that kind of stuff. That's our background. We've worked together for our whole lives. And through adversity, we have come to be 65 years old. I am, and Jen is 60 years old. And we're kind of starting all over in new media, and we're excited as heck to bring you along with us and enjoy the ride.
Absolutely. We have a company called Michael Bell Productions, and that's where we do all of our production work. But so we've got this other company going along here, which is our podcast, and we absolutely love it. I'm telling you, we started this, at, like Mike said, through adversity, and it is the most fun time of my life. I've never felt more alive in my brain.
I know, you're scary.
By doing these podcasts.
You know, you are. I'm telling you the truth. I've never seen you like this in your whole, you have awakened like some kraken from, you're doing great. Hey, one of our little landmark episodes or part of the episode is Time Off. Tell them about it.
Yeah, Time Off is we're trying to find things that are inexpensive or free to do that is sort of gives you some fun. You can sit back, relax. And because we're getting older, we don't have the kind of money we had when we were younger.
That is true.
So the Time Off this week is Billions. And Billions is on Showtime. Now, I know Showtime is expensive.
It's a premium channel. Yep.
But we watch a lot of shows on Showtime. And Billions is one of them to watch if you have
it's
Showtime.
It's worth the money.
Oh, man. It has Paul Giamatti in it and Damian Lewis. And basically, it is this. It's a billionaire. Damian Lewis plays a billionaire.
Yep.
And he's sort of a young upstart, and everything comes easy to him, or so people presume. He works very hard all the time, but people think he's one of these upstart kids. And then Paul Giamatti is a district attorney who's sort of the old tie, the tie pin.
He's kind of jealous, isn't he?
He's very jealous.
Yeah.
And yet they're basically the same kind of character, just one version over another. And it's this sort of mind game thing that they go after each other. And
they're
both kind of bent,
aren't they?
They're very bent.
In their independent careers. The billionaire makes his money a little shady.
Yes.
The district attorney, well, he's not using the regular rules of the game either.
Right, and he's trying to bring down the billionaire, the district attorney, through some kind of tax evasion or this. So anyways, go check it out. You'll have a load of fun watching it. And season two, they're in season two right now. It's insanely good.
I know. Can't wait for every episode.
Oh, yeah.
Rose and Thorn.
Okay, Rose is when something good happens in the week, and Thorn is how something bad, but we always tell you how we got out of it. Okay, what is your rose?
Okay, my rose is good, but I'm already onto my thorn because
No, start with the rose.
I will. Okay, deep breath. The rose is definitely working with my brother Ron and you, of course, you part of the opening of this. It's Ron's new podcast. My brother Ron has now got a podcast, and I've been begging him to do this because he's kind of politically connected up in the province of Alberta, where we were born and raised.
In Canada.
In Canada. And he's got a podcast now that's called Sensible Alberta, and his first episode will be launched this week.
Aww.
And I'm nervous about it.
I know. You're driving me nuts.
I know I am. I truly am. I want to do a great job for him. You know, I really do. Because he's a terrific guy, and I just want to help him out. Anyway, my thorn. If this wasn't enough, Jen's cell phone died.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, around our house, that is like a catastrophe. Your house, too, I'm sure, huh? Okay, so Mr. Smarty Pants here has been learning all this stuff about new media all year and getting into the tech stuff, all that. I tried to do the data transfer myself. Total fail.
Well, at least you tried. I mean, Mike is really good at this stuff.
And apparently... not based on results.
Well, I mean,
anyway, it's backing up to the cloud right now, so we're hoping everything's going to be
fine. Well, so my thorn sort of hitchhikes off what happened. So when Mike couldn't... Well, you tried, my dear. I love you for it.
Thank you, Dawn.
When you tried to transfer my old data from an old phone to a new phone, we had to go to the Apple Genius Bar. It's in the United States here, and in Canada, there's Apple stores. And you can take them in, and you make an appointment, and they try to help you through your problem.
Right.
Well, we got in there, and the place was a madhouse.
It looked like a carnival
act. Oh, my gosh. There was kids screaming. I love kids. But
babies screaming.
Kids screaming.
iPhones in their baby hands.
Oh, it was... insane. And what was more insane is you just go to the back of the store and you wait, and the gentleman comes up and gets you, and you kind of sit at this bar. But it's so confusing because it's at the back of the store. Here I am. He's telling me to put in my Apple ID and my password, and I'm trying to remember it all, and I'm sweating.
Yeah.
I'm literally perspiring.
I saw you. You were perspiring and sweating. You were glowing.
Can I tell you why? Because it's at the back of the store. It's hot. There's like 1,000 people in there. People are screaming. This guy is so fast with everything because he's young.
Upside down. The phone is upside down.
And he's tapping away on his fingers, and I'm going like, okay, password.
Bing, bing.
And it just drove me crazy. But however...
there is a bright side.
There is a bright side. Everything got finally worked out.
The rose.
And the rose is, I took out insurance on my phone, which I thought never do. And I thought, when I first bought my phone 2.5 years ago, I have an iPhone 6 Plus. Not the iPhone 6S, but the iPhone 6 Plus.
Okay.
And I took the insurance out, and thank goodness I did, because my battery died on my phone, or is dying.
Yeah.
And for very little money... I was able to get a new phone.
That, at this point, doesn't function, but we're getting there.
But we'll get there.
We will get there.
If ever you think, should I get the insurance or not, they're telling me that the phones last only about 2 years.
Yeah.
Or if you 3 years. If you get 3 years, that's pretty good.
Yeah, there was amazement when they said, I've had it over 2 years. What?
I know.
You'd think, but no.
So look into the insurance if you can afford it. For me, it was
paid off.
Worth it.
Yeah. Kind of a special episode.
Yeah.
This is a special episode of Real People with Real Jobs. We've had some wonderful people on in the past. And this is your idea. I have to credit you with this, because the idea for this episode was marriage and working together, which we have done our entire lives. Then we thought, wait a minute. We know another couple, a real couple with real jobs, who are exactly in the same position. And they're our dear friends, Vince and Pam, of Invincible Productions. That's a recording studio that has, you'll hear it in the interview coming up, all kinds of ramifications, all kinds of talents and skills. They've been married like we have forever, and they have a wonderful story.
And you have worked with them for many years, for decades.
Decades.
So,
Vince and Pam.
Here we come.
Vince, how old are you, and how did you get your start?
Old Esther.
That's 69. I started as a music teacher in the Bay Area, and hooked up with a music company down here. Loved teaching for 5 years, but even loved it's a much different thing working with pros as working with trying to teach kids music. So that's how I got my start, coming down here. I actually started this company in 1978.
Wow.
But it had nothing to do with recording stuff. It had stuff to do with music.
Right. It was a place, this place was set up so that I could just work out my ideas.
Just incidentally, we're at Invincible Sound, or you call it
production
still?
Yeah, production.
It used to be, it was kind of
it
back
was,
and
it
forth.
It started as Invincible Sound.
Yeah.
But, you know.
That was a whole wife ago.
Oh.
Cut
there
that one.
There we go.
Yeah, on the dirt.
So Invincible Productions, we've been coming to see you and recording all of our stuff with you since like 1985.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that when it started?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a long time ago. So you've been in business a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came on end of 82.
Yeah, the focus changed. I mean, I was just writing music and it was great. About maybe 7 jingles every 2 weeks.
That's the jingle that's a work. Lot.
A lot of waterbed plays. In fact, my first jingle was Waterbed Emporium, which a guy who writes music, I think, or writes jingles, those jingles stay in your head forever.
Of course.
You know, so can you sing it? Yeah, sure. But I'm not going to.
Please. One line, I'm begging you.
Oh, come on. Do it.
Come on. You can do it.
Waterbed Emporium. Waterbed Emporium. And it had these frogs sitting on these lily pads. That's back when waterbeds were.
And slide whistles.
Slide whistles.
And all sorts of things. Oh,
barbershop quartet of like these four frogs.
That's awesome.
That is fantastic. Pam.
Yeah.
All right. I've known you forever. Mm-hmm. You're like a sister to me. How did you and Vince meet, and how long have you been married?
Well, as he said, he started the music business, and then a series of circumstances made him realize that he was going to have to go into the production end of it or not be in this business. So I came on at the end of 82 to help him out. I remember the IBM Selectric typewriter.
Oh, my gosh.
That he got me. I thought I had died and gone to heaven because it had that whole little ball that would erase.
Yeah.
I was never good at typing, so I used that erase ball a lot. And by 83, we were together. And then 85, I finally said, you better marry me.
Yeah, that was pretty
much.
Yeah, it was pretty
much. It sounds like a lot of pressure, really, because now you go from doing music to having endless stream of people coming in with their demands and requests and requirements.
We've been really lucky. We have been so lucky. We've had
strange people, don't get me wrong, but, you know, there's plenty of other studios we could point them toward. I mean, our focus was...
You mean get rid of them?
Yes,
yeah.
In a polite way. You know, yeah. And say, look, there's people that really want to hear your project. And it's really hard to work with somebody else's projects. It's just like in writing, when you've had to work with other writers, it's like, it's so much easier to be the writer and the producer, and you just do it. So,
In fact, in the beginning, people would call and say, you know, I'd like to have Vince arrange a chart for me. And I finally had to say, you know, Vince does not work well with others. He really doesn't.
And I tried it. I tried it maybe 2 or 3 times, and it was like,
no.
And I don't even want to say the client's name because those stick with me really well.
The bad ones.
Better than the
good ones.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah. How long have you been married?
June 14th, it'll be 31 years.
Wow.
That's a long time, Vince.
It is.
And have there been, like, obviously ups and downs and trials and tribulations, but...
Well, when you work together, you're around each other all the time, so yeah.
Yeah, and you can really have to... I mean, I think the key to us was he was embarking on a new venture. I was young. I was, 25? And I didn't mind working 13, 14, 15 hours. That was just the norm to establish a business. And... I saw him, you know, firsthand where he'd try to get people to pay him and what
is beg for the work.
Yeah, beg for the work.
Then beg to get paid. You know, it's like, and don't tick anybody off that, you know, you want to ask for the money, but you don't want to be so money hungry.
Who's best at that? Who's best at that?
We play a little
good cop, bad cop.
Bad cop thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She does the first calls. And then when she says, Vince, you got to call. And then when I call, they go, oh, I guess I pushed that as far as I could.
Older, we're taking notes.
Well, what's interesting, it's like we're talking to ourselves because we did the same thing. The hardest part of this business is getting paid.
Getting paid and becoming kind of reclusive. I mean, people would say, you know, this is going on, that's going on. Really? Oh, okay. Or like what happens, I was just telling Jen that... say an agency will call up and they'll say, so-and-so talent is in town and we're going to book you. And I'd go, oh, okay. Like I knew who this person was. I had no idea.
Right.
Okay. So I had to queue up IMDb and go, oh, okay. So when this guy walked in, I knew not to say, you know, something that was going to offend or whatever.
Hello to the chauffeur.
Oh, shush. Yeah. All right.
That's happened. I'm looking at you too. And I know that has happened.
Yes. It was
Ken Griffey Jr.
Ken, well, he was dressed in like basketball shorts. and a tank top, and he had all this bling. And there's this really nice man dressed in a suit, and I shook his hand, and I said, "It's very nice to meet you, Mr. Griffey." And he's going, "That's him."
Pointing to
yes. Oh, the other guy. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, okay, well, shouldn't have, they didn't have IMDb back then.
What's IMDb? Yeah.
Oh, good God.
Just for our listeners.
So it's where you want to learn what a star has done.
Oh.
You know, what movie was that guy in? You IMDb, and it shows all their screen credits, all their acting credits, what voices they've been in, what affiliations that has this guy also directed.
Huh.
You know, like, well, honestly, I felt really bad because I had to look up James Cameron.
I didn't know.
Dear. But you wanted to know his scope of work,
yes.
Which is admirable.
Yes. I didn't
want to make that mistake again of shaking the wrong hand.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to know who you're working with just so you know you're going to get paid, too.
And don't actors look different when you see them in person when they're on stage or on TV or
Oh, the one
you know,
who
on
was the
film?
Amazing. We had Jeff Bridges in here, and he's sitting in the booth, and he's a handsome man. This is 30 years ago.
He was doing a
charitable bid for what was it? Project Concern.
Yeah, Project Concern.
Yeah, so which was a
good for you.
Yeah, it's a big yeah. Feed the Children worldwide.
So he's sitting in here.
He's sitting in here, and all of a sudden, he was being filmed from the booth from the studio,
and they had monitors set up so they could see what was going on.
I peeked a look into what the camera was seeing, and it's like, I now know what photogenic means. That man lit up the screen.
Wow.
The cheekbones, the jaw structure, everything. You can't.
Blue eyes, dazzled. I mean, he was just dressed normal. He's just the lighting and the camera just.
Yeah, it was my first thought. That's what photogenic means. Yeah.
That's a movie star.
Yeah. Huh? That's a movie star.
So, well, I know you've had Sigourney Weaver in here. Right?
She is really sweet.
And yes.
The only reason I know is because I still have the cigarette that she was using when you were recording her ADR, which is when they don't have the audio when they shoot the portion of the motion picture, they come and record it again in the background, like we were doing here. And she had a cigarette in her hand in filming, so she had to have a cigarette in her hand and in her lips when she was recording here. I have her DNA.
That was the day that it was a very good day. They were in here doing all the Avatar people were in town doing Comic-Con.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And so they set up. We had to pass Fox security. They liked that we were this innocuous little nothing building at the end of a row of nothing buildings, nothing to bring attention to ourselves.
Sure.
And She walks in, and James Cameron walks in, and he just gave her a big hug, and he said, "They just approved us to go on all of the major airline carriers, and Avatar, that is why she had to come in here. She had to take out all the cuss words."
Oh, I see.
And before that, they told me, "Look, James can be really hard to work with. Roll with it." Well, he was a doll because he just picked up $50 million from some sponsor. He walked in and he's like, "Yeah, well, oh yeah, that's fine. Yeah, Sigourney, yeah, do what you want." I mean, he still directed her and everything, but he was, what's wrong with this guy? He's fine, you know. But they were warning me, you know, don't get upset if he, you know, throws a chair through a window. No, not that bad, but I mean, gets up real harsh.
He had a reputation, but he was delightful. Yeah.
Who's your favorite person that you can think of who was famous that you've worked with?
I loved Barry White.
Barry White?
Never knew my name. I was always Sweetie Pie.
Oh, nice.
Sweetie Pie.
He was so blind that they would write
I had really advanced diabetes.
So big that one sentence would fit on a page.
Uh-huh.
And so he would have to go through. It's not like he had to do a whole lot. It's like, oh, baby. You know,
I remember.
You know?
He played some of this
500
back for me.
Lots
and
of...
it was like, I remember it was, cluck, cluck, baby.
Right, yeah, that's
50,000 watts of love.
Room, and the whole room shook.
Yeah.
The speakers were just, it was amazing.
Unfortunately, he died waiting for a kidney transplant.
Aww.
His son had just been approved to be transplant, and he didn't make it.
So he was your favorite. Is he your favorite too, Vince?
I don't know if favorite. I mean...
Stands out more.
You know who stood up for me?
You know who Blythe Danner comes in? I love this story.
Okay.
She comes in and she's doing a spot for a hospital in the East Coast. And I come in and I introduce myself and she says, "Hello, I'm Gwyneth Paltrow's mother.
Yeah, because people
and
don't
I
know.
Said, you are one of my favorite actresses. Oh, I have my. Followed you. And I started naming the stuff. She said, well, thank you. My goodness. Her mom lived in Rancho Santa Fe.
Oh, wow. Oh,
so that's why she was
here. She was out here visiting her mom.
Oh.
So what I see with the two of us, you were sort of the upfront part of it, where you kind of booked everything. You got the actors in. You got them comfortable. And then, Vince, you took over from there. So it was
that's
a little orchestra
job.
As
yeah,
we
just,
go. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of perfect. You're the conductor and you are the... That is so amazing.
Well, I've seen you. You're Vince works like a whirling dervish. And so, you know, you just have to kind of step back, go and hide in this room that has been part of our life for all these years, this room, and then watch him do his thing out there and just know it's going to be okay.
Yes, yeah. Stand back.
And
you're intense,
Mike,
buddy.
You and I know how many spots we would do. Like
tens of thousands.
You know, in an hour and a half, we could crank out 20 spots. Boom.
But we're getting money per spot.
Well, that's true.
But you know what was interesting about the two of you, Mike and Vince, is that you had your own language.
Right.
Yeah, it was like shorthand in words. and then they start, and
grunts
no one knows
squeaks.
What they're talking about.
Do it again. No, that's good. That's it.
But that's the beauty about being working together for so long is that you have that foundation. I have a question for both of you. Through all these years, what has been the greatest challenge of being married and working together?
Raising the kids.
Being married and working together.
Correct.
That's it. That's the answer.
Being married,
too.
Working together. I was teasing.
That's also the answer.
Yeah, don't have loaded firearms. Not recommended.
No.
So children. Raising the children.
Children
were. We've always focused on that.
We have four girls between us. They were always number one in both of our, they came first.
Okay.
My twins were raised in my office. There were, you know, pack and plays. And then there were jigsaw puzzles, and I'll never forget Joan Embry from the San Diego Zoo.
Yes.
She comes in, Rachel was coloring in her coloring book, and she comes in and said, "And can I color with you?" And then she says, "Do you know I'm a twin, too?" And I said, "Joan, I've known you for years. I didn't know that." And yeah, she's a twin.
How wonderful.
Yeah, so it was, and it almost was one of those, if you don't like my kids being here, then we're not a good fit. It's just, I mean, it's not like they were hellraisers.
That's why you have more than one studio in town. I mean, they can,
I mean, that was the way to do it. I just didn't want my kids turned over to a daycare center when we were
so close. I mean, it's easy.
It was easy. And he's so good with kids.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Would you say the same thing, kids? Or were there other things? Like, did you sort of never get to put your business on hold?
Well, if I was going
to
give somebody a recommendation that work together, the hardest thing is to unplug from work. Because you're always together. Then you go home, you're still talking about work. And you've got to think of, you know, personal relationship wise, do you really want to be talking about work all the time? It's going to happen anyhow, because it weaves in and out whether you're here or not. I mean, that's part of the reason keeping the studio and having a home is really nice, because if I had the studio at home, we have another studio at home, it's really hard to unplug. But when you come here, you're like in another environment. Okay. And it always was set up that Pam was running the front office, I was running back. So even though we're around each other all the time, we have our tasks to do. Mm-hmm. When you're at home, you're together. So it's a new environment. It really helps separate being work all the time and being together all the time.
So you had separate tasks is what you're saying. And that's, if you're going to be married and work together, you need to sort of have, okay, this is what I'm in charge of and this is what you're in charge of.
When you get home, it's a joint effort on everything.
Got it.
There's also that physical change where you've moved from the facility to home. Home should be home. You know, let's argue. Let's not argue. Let's...
You know what? I'm just thinking, because you know the segment is called "Real People with Real Jobs," but really, what you're defining, I think, Vince, is this is real people with real careers, and that's why everything spills over to 24 hours a day in your head.
Yeah,
pretty much.
This is your life,
right.
Isn't it? Really,
mm-hmm. But
both of you.
We started. Mm-hmm. I married my best friend.
Aww.
So, how could you? How do you do with your best friend? Well, let's.
Well, there were times. There were times.
Yeah.
I mean, there were hard times, I'm sure. Like, we all talk about the businesses as trying to get money in. We've had feast and famine, you know, I mean.
Right. I was trying to, we took our grandson and his girlfriend out to lunch yesterday, and he's a videographer. He's only 18, but he's like a wunderkind. And I was trying to explain to him a typical Friday afternoon was all the radio reps just racing to the studio to get dubs. Do you remember dubs?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Get on
okay.
air.
Because right. if they didn't get that dub by like 3 o'clock, in there was there
those, make goods.
Yeah, the make goods were, would start on Monday, and you know, trying to explain like what is a radio rep. They'd never heard of
what's a
like
real
that.
To real. These
what is real to real?
Yeah. Everything's FTP and internet.
So has that changed what you do significantly?
It has, because when I first started, I would write a piece and I would sketch out all the parts, be very precise about it because I'm going to pay musicians to come in and play this piece of music for me. And it's costly. You're on the clock with both the musicians and the studio and everything else, and you want it to go perfect. All of that has changed now because everything is computerized. So I can hear all my ideas almost to the finished point. That's the good part. The caveat is that there's no synergism. You're one person doing everything.
Whereas
versus
if
I
you
could,
had a group.
So, Mike, I wrote this line. Here's how I hear it. And then you read it and you go, no, how about this? And you go, man, that's even better yet.
Yeah.
That part, I really miss that interaction with other people. But it's just a jingle. It's going to run what?
Yeah.
So you have to give up something for all of the...
I guess we're trying to get to like this social media soaked world. I mean, we're soaked in this. How have you guys had to adapt to still stay in business?
I answered that right here.
Yeah. Look.
No.
Yeah.
We're dinosaurs.
We are. We really are.
Yeah.
You're not.
I'm not on Facebook. On Twitter.
Oh.
I mean, I know of these things, but I kind of stay away from it. And I think it's there's a cutting, two-edged that sword. You can put too much out there to where people go, I don't like your politics. I'm not going to work with you.
Well,
you know, so
yeah.
We're kind of like,
I'm stealth. I just observe what everybody says. It's
yes.
like, oh, my God, you're saying that? Man, you better watch. I mean, I would never put out what these people just...
So much information about themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, who worries about the government? These guys are putting so much information about themselves and not even thinking about the repercussions of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have said some pretty incendiary things. I may not hire you again.
Right.
You know,
interesting.
And so it's almost like in this quest for everybody knowing everything about you, which to me is just strange. But that's like my kids and my grandkids are the same thing. They'll just spew. There's no filter anymore. Mm-hmm. That everything that they do is filmed or noted or on Facebook or on something. And I really find that odd that there's no privacy anymore.
No privacy. But with the two of you, though, I know, Vince, you have started to write music for video games.
Right.
So, I mean, that is moving out. That's leaning into this new world, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, because I think that, like, for us, with us, everything changed like 2 years ago. Everything. And everything went digital and just everything went different.
Yes.
There's now streaming commercials on Hulu or, you know, a Netflix or whatever. And it just changed from the television commercial to online streaming video.
So you had to do that to remain relevant.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They'll pass you by.
Well, that's the struggle, isn't it?
Yeah, but we're still of the
dinosaur.
People still listen to the radio. They still watch television. You know, the kids might not be doing that, but they don't have any money anyhow, so they're kind of not our audience anyway.
Exactly.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
You know.
So once you get to be our age, we're not relevant.
No, I didn't mean that.
We absolutely are wrong. If there was anything to tell our listeners on having a happy marriage and working together, let's start with the marriage, just to leave this interview. What would be the ingredient to a happy, long marriage?
Long.
Compromise.
I think that's a good word, compromise. Yeah.
Compromise. Yeah. You're not going to... Very rarely do we, you know... fight for what we think is right and just kind of give it up and say,
you get too thin skinned. I mean, you just got to let it go, you know. And then what's the, there's no real winner in a marriage if you don't both win. I mean, and that means you just have to be a little more compromising, I guess, mm-hmm. Or forgiving or open. I think if you look at making the person you live with happy, you're going to be happy. No one, it's just like that whole thing. No one wants to think, or it's like these maybe catchphrases. If I, the more I give, the more I get. But I'm not giving it so I get it. I'm just giving it, and the byproduct is a happier marriage, maybe. Maybe that's the secret. I don't know.
Well, Vince is also, all the years I've known him, the glass is always half full.
Yeah, that's
always.
True.
I mean, he can take the most dire news and say, well, something's good coming.
I'm still
coming
alive.
Out of this.
I'm the guy falling from that 100-story building.
Well, I haven't hit
so
yet.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
You know, that makes a big difference if you have somebody like that in your life. There has to be somebody that has a bright lookout on life. And I also think it's, you fix stuff. You know, we come from an era where, you know, I go and get my shoes repaired and I got my bag repaired. I don't throw stuff out
right. And
replace it. And
yeah.
I feel that's the same way with you two and Mike and I, is that if something is broken, we fix it together. Because so if you throw it out and you have a new person in your life, they're only new. It doesn't mean they're better.
Right.
And I think as the years go by and you're together, you build this wonderful friendship, love, something deeper than you could ever have by replacing it when
right.
you're unhappy.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really the case now where people are divorcing, or maybe they're just in a relationship for a couple months or years, and then it's like, not with that, and they go from relationship to relationship. The problem is that they're always taking themselves.
Yeah, well, that's what we always say. You're going to be unhappy as long as you keep taking yourself with you.
Yourself, keep, you know, unless you figure it out. What you really need. I mean, you're the problem, so it's going to be the problem wherever you go.
Yeah, you are where you go.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And so finally, Mike, I think we wanted to ask you, so with somebody that's starting out in this business now, whether they're our age that finally said they want to get into this business, or they're starting, they're young, what advice would you give them?
Be open to change, because it's going to change no matter what. It's almost what they told me when I first went to college. They says, hey, look to your left, look to your right. Those two people are going to be gone. Or your job's going to be gone. It's going to change. Change is the way of life. So
yeah,
be ready for it.
It's always changed.
You know, it's,
yeah.
It doesn't have to change drastically. I mean, look, we're still in the same facility here. This is this place. We've been here since 1980. Mm-hmm. Started the business in 78. We're sitting here. It's 1980. It still works. It's still viable. It's changed, yeah. Services different people. But.
Yeah, I was thinking there's a young couple that want to take over our business.
Yes.
And they're savvy on social media. And it's like, okay, then I think you guys can do it. I don't know that we could, because it's foreign to us.
And it's because we're looking at the next stage for us. What do you want to do with this facility? Well, I'd like to turn it over to another young couple that would, or young person, or somebody else who wants to take it to the next stage, basically selling the business. And so we ran across this young couple that were taking classes on running studios and engineering, mm-hmm. and they both came in here, and she's more of a marketer, and he's more of the technical side of it. And we're not really negotiating, but we're still talking with them. And it would be, in my opinion, you know, I was trying to tell them, look, it's not all roses. I don't want you to think that, hey, you're just going to walk in here, because they're pretty, you know, walk in here. Look, I got a facility. I just walk in. What do I have to do for this? And, well, you have to be a people person. I mean, you have to have a service that people want, not just this facility, these four walls. Brick and mortar is kind of going away in a lot of businesses. It's all internet and why should I have to go to a facility? Well, these are the reasons.
Yeah.
You know, working out of your house, you can do a lot.
Yeah.
Working on a facility, you can do even more if you take advantage of a brick and mortar versus working out of a home.
Well, say Vince and Pam, you're both wonderful. You're both talented. That's why you're real people with real jobs.
Wow.
Thank you very
so
much.
Far.
So far, yeah.
Wow.
I know, almost made me cry.
Oh, me too, because I have to tell you, they remind me of us.
Yeah, I know.
Because they work together
they
so
us.
Long. They are us. And did you hear that Vince is continuing to, he's leaning in.
Yeah, he's leaning
he's
in. They're both leaning
everything.
In.
Everything.
Yeah,
and
I know.
He's taking his business and he's adapting to the new world.
I know.
And that is probably why he's been in business for so long, don't
I know.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
And Pam, too, because they've worked together through thick and thin. They've seen economies go up and down.
Yes.
They've almost been out of work, but they've held on to their business. Well,
they're relentless.
Relentless.
That's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's a talent and a skill.
And they stuck together. So thank you, Pam and Vince. Wonderful.
Yes. Real people with real jobs. You bet.
So,
Jen's Health Minute. This is the second week in a row I've done this. Are you forgive me about
yeah,
this?
Yeah. What I wanted to do was, usually I came up with this Jen's Health Minute, just a little tiny thing we can
yeah.
pass on to people. But Mike has... high cholesterol. So
mm-hmm.
he's on like a Lipitor type of
a statin.
And that brings down his cholesterol.
Right.
But along with this, what did the doctor
okay.
tell you, Mike?
Now, you've heard this, and I'm sure you're almost tired of hearing this, but people don't do it. An 82 milligram aspirin, according to most, every physician that I've spoken to, but you'll have to see your own, is that we're going to be okay if you take an 82 milligram aspirin every day with your statin. It's more likely to keep your blood thin enough so that you're not going to have clotting problems as easily. So though I absolutely insist you check with your doctor, that 82, and obviously every brand name comes out with that dosage now, taking that daily is really good.
Let me ask you, is that a baby aspirin?
Yeah, that's okay. typically called a baby aspirin.
Okay, so a baby yeah. aspirin. And this is probably only for people, though, who have that kind of problem, having high cholesterol?
Yeah, you don't just go popping those
exactly.
things.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay.
exactly.
So check with your doctor.
I mean, I know, I've heard this before, that if aspirin was released on the market today, it would have to be with a prescription. It's that powerful.
I heard that, too.
Yeah.
And I've also heard that if you're... feel like you're having a heart attack.
Yeah.
If you take a baby aspirin, that helps.
Actually, I think that's the whole... And here's another thing.
Yeah.
I'd heard about that, you know, if somebody's in distress, chomping on an aspirin or having one that dissolves under the tongue
right.
is a big deal
a
right
away. A
dissolvable
one, yes.
And that there was going to be on the market, there were going to be these kind of crisis aspirin. Now, I don't know if it's insurance reasons or whatever. We looked for that.
We did.
A product from anybody and couldn't find that.
No. But again, check with your doctor
yeah.
and see, because mm-hmm. I know aspirin can cause... stomach bleeding in some cases.
Yeah, it is.
But for him, but just check it out. I thought it was interesting for those who may have the same problem as you.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So check with the doc, find out if that's the right thing for you, and it's going to be fine.
Okay, we have another really fun thing that we added was Remember When.
Oh, my God.
And Remember When is a memory that may make you smile from way back, or in this case, it doesn't seem like that far long ago.
I know.
But Mike, tell them the story of Bill Comrie with The Brick, which is the company that Mike is a spokesperson for up in Canada,
yes.
many years ago. Because I was in that meeting. I was the only female in that meeting with all the vice presidents.
I remember because
yeah.
you were the only female around for the longest possible
yeah.
time in there. Too. Anyway, the story is, and now that the perspiration part of the cell phone thing is over, we can relax and tell a story about the old days. I can see, in my mind, I can see this right now. A meeting of a whole bunch of people, all kinds of people. They're all gathered around. Of course, Bill comes in last, strides in, and he's got this, like, it looks like a man's purse or something.
It's
like
kind of a...
yeah.
It looks like a carry-on suitcase. It,
like over-the-shoulder
yeah,
bag.
Yeah, but something you would
an
take
evening
on an...
bag, at least.
Something you would take on an airplane, more like.
Okay. So he sits down, thud. He opens up the case, and it's got this telephone receiver. Picks it up, and it's wireless. And it's the first ever cell phone. And he had one. I mean, he probably was like the guy number three who had it. But there was an audible gasp in the room. And we went, oh, my God. And Bill, you know, he sits there and he's kind of glowing away and he's prideful of this thing. And we couldn't blame him because this was a marvel, probably weighed, I don't know, 6 pounds.
But remember, Mike, it was the size of a brick. If not bigger. It was
brick.
Gigantic.
It was huge.
It was just huge. And what was so funny was we were like, oh, my God, is this? We didn't think that this actually would take off.
No.
Who's going to drag around this gigantic phone? It's never mm-hmm. going to work. But remember, then the phones obviously
into the car.
Into the car. And I was one of the first ones with a car phone because I'm always addicted to
phones.
Oh,
you are on the phone. That's why it died.
And then it went to the Razor phone,
yep.
And it went really tiny.
Was that the flip guy?
Yeah, the flip phone.
Okay.
Remember the Razor phone, you guys? It's a flip phone. Many people still use them, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they're starting to go bigger again. Thinner, not the size of a brick,
mm-hmm.
but bigger.
I know, and you appreciate it, too, when you're texting and doing everything else, don't you?
Yeah, did we ever think when Bill pulled out that size, that brick phone, that we would now basically be using them for email, text,
there are
pictures.
Lifelines.
I mean, you get physically yes.
nervous without your phone.
Yes.
Don't
I think
you?
Many people do.
I do, too. If I leave the house, go run errands or whatever, and I've left my phone at home, I'm like a nervous wreck. I have to admit it.
Mike, I feel weird. I can't even leave mine in the car. If I go in for a Starbucks and I think, where's my phone? I have to go back out because I'm afraid somebody will break into my car and take it. It's a sad state of affairs.
So, Bill, I hope, if you're listening, I hope that you kept that darn thing because it's going, baby, to the Smithsonian and you are going to be, you know, forever known as the dude with the phone. Oh, that was a great day.
We've come a long way.
We have. So we usually roll it up with a quote. So let's roll it back up again and, you know, encourage people to do like we talked about marriage and working together and things like that. Coming together is a beginning. Keeping together is progress. Working together is success. Believe it or not, Henry Ford.
Wow.
I love that. It could apply to everything and everybody, couldn't it?
Absolutely.
Cool, huh?
But yeah, it is because it is working together. The reason why we're together is we just don't throw things away.
Yeah.
We make things work.
Correct.
And that we're in a throwaway society now. And mm-hmm. you know what? What do you get? You don't get bigger and better. You just get different.
No, I'm with you 100%. And Henry Ford to have done that.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, what was in his mind when he was saying those
cars?
Things. Yeah, well, pretty much, yeah. Yeah, okay, fine.
Okay,
and you're going to roll it up here with this one.
The greatest marriages are built on teamwork,
mm-hmm.
a mutual respect, a healthy dose of admiration, and a never-ending portion of love and grace.
Fawn Weaver. Whoever she is.
Whoever she is, that is so true.
Okay. Wait a sec. You're not getting away with
what?
This. What? You got to do it as a VO.
Oh, gosh.
You're a voice talent, for Pete's sake, so lean in here.
Have we ever stayed married?
Oh, here we go. Here it is. At the end of the episode 48, divorce.
Yeah, never.
Wrinkled, not divorced. Okay, here it is.
The greatest marriages are built on teamwork, a mutual respect, a healthy dose of admiration, and a never-ending portion of love and grace. And I love you, my dear.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And remember, we weren't born yesterday.